The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 29th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks, but we are loaded to bear. Alex Perrine will be joining us to look back on this week, particularly the past 2 days. U.S. Senate candidate Lucas Kuntz running for the Senate primary in Missouri, which is taking place on Tuesday. And Andy Kindler, who is going to be running to his therapist appointment after he is done.
I couldn't. Why'd you have to reveal that?
He said it on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
Meanwhile, fallout continues from the surprise Manchin-Schumer deal. House passes the CHIPS bill, headed to Biden's desk. Republicans slammed for holding up a bill to help ailing vets and claim they'll sink the marriage equality bill. Meanwhile, the Michigan Supreme Court bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. First Trader's Joe's gets a union as Hadley, Mass. Workers vote to approve. And that's weird. Top Trump DHS leaders also reset their phones so that their text messages of January 6th were wiped. This as DOJ looks to interview top Trump officials. Democratic Senate prospects looking better. Biden administration will make an Omicron booster available in the fall. San Francisco and New York State declare monkeypox emergencies. Speaking of New York State, CVS sued for an antitrust violation targeted at hospitals that serve the poor. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is this Casual Friday. Is the music still low in the sound? We were getting reports. Did we?
It was a little bit low today.
Yeah, we were getting that on the IM. Check, keep an eye on that.
Okay.
At the beginning of the show, so that we got that. Sam and music a little bit low, but Emma Vigeland, who is here, not even wearing a collar. So
no collar for me.
On this Casual Friday, pretty collarless of you.
Yes, that is the name of the game.
I want everyone to know we have ordered an air conditioner for the office. It will be here supposedly on Monday. And so
I want people to know that I currently am using this air cooler that I got where I put ice cubes in it and it blows air on me. It's a scam, so don't get them. It does not work. It works for like the first 30 minutes maybe, but now
That's how old-timey air conditioners were, was literally just a fan in front of a block of ice.
Ah, yeah. Wow.
I'm still expecting Kristen Sinema is going to intervene and get in the way of our delivery on Monday, so, of the air conditioner.
Right.
There you go. Well, all right, let's get to this. We got a lot of things to go through. There's a lot of fallout and a lot of reporting that is starting to happen as to how this all came about. with the sequencing of the CHIPS bill, and then all of a sudden, Manchin and Schumer. And I know that Emma talked about this deal yesterday, and we'll talk more about it with Alex Perrine, the specifics of it. But there's more reporting coming out. Manchin is pretending that this was just a sort of a coincidence. There was no secret plan here. And now the Republicans are trying to plan, pretend that they're not actually mad about it. Here is John Cornyn out in Capitol Hill on yesterday explaining why they essentially stopped the veterans' health care bill. Now, remember, they had voted on this weeks ago in favor of it. There had to be a technical fix that it was brought back to the Senate floor to fix it. This is fairly common. And yet they voted it down this time because they were being so pissy about this reconciliation bill. Here is John Cornyn now claiming that it was, well, there was an amendment.
What happened in June is that the leadership of the Democratic Party double-crossed. Senator Tester, Senator Moran made an agreement that there would be two amendments. Senator Schumer agreed to the same thing, and then they reneged on that. This bill will ultimately pass, but it will be more fiscally responsible. Senator Toomey, who led that effort, is negotiating with the leadership for things that should have been done last June, but which were reneged upon. So it will pass.
I mean, they're taking a big, big hit on this politically, which is good. And what's interesting is they also understand that they're not going to they're not going to whine about it because it makes them look even worse when they whine that they get played. The Democrats could take a good lesson from this. Mm-hmm. There is no political value in complaining that our opponents outsmarted us. That doesn't help you with anybody. There's no referee. You know, the manager's not going to show up and say, you got to do this again. The teacher's not going to come in and say, well, hey guys, let's redo that last inning.
That wasn't fair. Happen. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're taking a page out of a certain other Democrats' book, which is to hide behind Senate procedure and hope it's so convoluted that people don't really know what you're actually doing. But the reality is that they were just vindictive. They were pissed that Manchin and Schumer actually, in a rare moment of effective maneuvering, hid that they had come to this agreement so they could preserve the reconciliation option for the Inflation Reduction Act or whatever branding got Manchin on board with it. The bill that's the shadow of Build Back Better, that's one-ninth of what was initially proposed. But that was a smart strategy, and for maybe the first time in years, McConnell was outmaneuvered a bit. Although you could argue that he was as well with the second COVID relief package. But they're pissed about this. And so they're using veterans with health issues as a punching bag or as a way to stick their thumb in the face of the Democrats. And they're also saying, Susan Collins, even, that they're probably going to do it with the gay marriage bill as well. So, as you say, lesson to the Democrats, these are the kind of people you're dealing with, and treat them with the appropriate aggressiveness to beat them back.
And we now have Susan Collins coming out saying that this maneuver is now going to threaten the marriage equality bill because I think because Susan Collins is a liar. I want to say pathological, but that's not true. She lies with real intent. And so it is, and, you know, they might be using this as a way of avoiding having to vote on this marriage equality bill, which they are very nervous about voting for. And people have to keep a good eye on this now, because what's happening in the Senate, and we'll talk about this with Perrine maybe a little bit as well. What's happening in the Senate is fascinating in terms of where Democratic Senate challengers are. In Pennsylvania, it looks like Oz is just like dropping like a lead balloon. Fetterman is running a great campaign, and surely it's not helping that Mastriano, who was running for governor, is out there. And granted, there's still plenty of time in that race, but he's out there having to reiterate that he's not a Nazi. And that's not where you want to be in the general election. You don't want to have to be out there trying to convince people that despite the fact that you're hanging out with a bunch of anti-Semites and fascists, that you're not one of them. It's got to be just one of those sort of like, who knew what would happen? I went to this event and he was there. And it's sort of like that Gilbert Gottfried joke about Kurt Waldheim. Gottfried passed away recently. He had a great joke. Kurt Waldheim was the former UN Secretary General. And it came out at one point that he, I can't remember the exact charge, so I want to be circumspect here, but that he had some affiliations to the actual Nazis. And Gilbert Gottfried had a funny joke where he was, and I'm not going to do the Gilbert Gottfried joke, but voice, but where he was out on a vacation to Berlin with his wife. And he told his wife, take a picture of me right over here. And just as she was about to click the picture, Hitler walked by. And Waldheim said, stop! Don't take the picture! Stop! Don't take the picture! There's that quality for Mastriano there. All right, before we take a break for a sponsor and get to Alex Perrine, just a couple updates on a couple of things. Wednesday, we had protesters on who are going to disrupt the congressional baseball game. On Thursday, three folks got arrested. Didn't necessarily make the big news splash that I think they were hoping because I think largely overshadowed by this big congressional deal. But three folks got arrested there. And at the very least, there was, you know, posters and whatnot. I mean, it's going to take a lot of pressure. Also, just an update on what happened with Hadley, Massachusetts. Trader Joe gets a union as the Hadley, Mass. Workers vote to approve. And if you can go back and listen to our interview with those folks on June 15th, it's a big deal. And it's good news. Go back June 15th and check out that thing. All right, we got to take a word for our sponsor for a moment, and then we'll be back. Just a reminder, today's program is sponsored by SunsetLakeSebade.com. Sunset Lake has all sorts of products. They have third-party testing of their products. You can go there to their website and see all of the elements that are in their Sebade. We have pre-rolls and tinctures. We have gummies with melatonin for sleep. We have a coffee and fudge with Sebade. For me now, like I go to bed with Sebade with the tinctures, and sometimes I switch it up with the melatonin with the gummies. If I can remember on time to take them, you know, like about half hour, 45 minutes beforehand, because my metabolism is so slow that anything I eat takes me a long time to digest. But then I am finding, you know, just because the summer has been a little bit, the summer's been a little bit tough this summer, just in terms of like juggling different things. And so I'm finding that on occasion after dinner, I will have a smokable Sebade. Very nice. And just relax a little bit. It is almost like it's like a my modern day fat cat like cigar move, but it is not in any way like that. Just a couple of puffs, but all great products. And if you use the code LEFTISBEST, you get 20% off. They are fans of the show. They are movement partners. They have donated over $25,000 just last year to strike funds and food pantries and innocence projects and Give Directly. They're a great company, mostly employee owned. They have great farming practices. They practice regenerative farming and integrated pest management, so no pesticides. Check them out, sunsetlakesebade.com. Use the coupon code LEFTISBEST and get 20% off. Quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Alex Preen. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. And joining us, we had a little bit of technical difficulties, but we have resolved them. Alex Preen, the host of The Politics of Everything, the contributing editor to The New Republic, and of course, the proprietor of the AP, the good one.
Mm-hmm.
That is his Substack. So, Substacker, Let's talk about the, I mean, this deal, and Emma went through some of the details yesterday, but you know, it worth going back over. But your first, well, I know what your first reaction to this is. I don't even have to ask you. It is, I'll wait until the thing is signed before I buy into this too much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
I mean, it still seems possible that Joe Manchin could go like, wait a second. It was an intern who sent out that press release in my office.
Yeah. Or like, you know, the White House will send out a press release that'll be like, you know, we appreciate that senators named Joe have come to the table, and he'll be like, oh, that's a bridge too far. Like, now I got to pull away from the negotiating table.
But let's assume that this actually goes through. If it does, what happened here? You know, David Dayen reports that, as far as he can tell, that it was a function of Manchin basically seeing that he was getting pilloried by, you know, some beltway op-eds, essentially. Like, what's your sense of it?
Yeah, I mean, I read his reporting, and, you know, obviously I follow a lot of people who are pretty plugged in, and a lot of them seemed really surprised that this came out of nowhere. And so I do think that has to be pretty close to what happened here, is that Manchin thought he was going to be universally praised as the guy who reined in the left and got serious about inflation and stopped these wild-eyed progressives from spending too much government money, and then was kind of surprised to see that, like, the sorts of people whose opinions he actually cares about were blaming him for blowing up the president's domestic agenda. I think that's really the only explanation that makes sense. And to some extent, you know, it is a function of, like, the, you know, Manchin and Schumer wanting to get this chips and bipartisan stuff done, and then, like, wanting to time it that way. But there was really no indication that Manchin planned to, like, actually come around and support anything like this up until it happened. So, yeah, I think Dan's right.
Let's assume for a moment that is correct. That's psychotic.
Yeah, it is, right? It's detached from reality. It's bizarre. It's, like, genuinely bizarre. Yeah.
I mean, just so people understand, like, a couple of op-eds override the fact that it's been helping him in West Virginia. I mean, maybe he doesn't want to run for re-election. Maybe he thinks that there's no way that he's going to win in re-election. I think, like, you know, all the outside agitation that people undoubtedly impacted the conventional beltway wisdom. I mean, I think, you know, you and I have been doing this long enough where, you know, 15 years ago, that the resilience of that conventional beltway wisdom was much more, like, durable, I think,
yeah,
and less subject to outside influence. And so in some way, I mean, I guess there's some measure of, like, you know, democracy had functioned here, but the idea that this guy is making these type of decisions based upon a couple of op-eds, I think is just, and I think it's true. I do think it's real, but I think it's psychotic. And I think this is the way it works.
And this is the really nutty part. And, you know, you sort of say it's hard to imagine this 15 years ago, like, The interesting part is we have now, and I don't mean to sound too optimistic or sanguine because the media landscape is a complete nightmare, but we do have a world in which there are former Obama people who, like, work with former Obama people who are, you know, putting out newsletters and columns that are like, it's the center that is sabotaging everything. And whereas before it would have been like, you and I and Atrios saying that, right? Like, and no one would listen. No one would have cared or listened. But when you actually have, you know, people that the Beltway has to treat as serious, echoing those claims, making those same claims, it does actually seem to change things. And you know, it's the public pressure, the protest. To some extent, you know, you can say, oh, they protested on his yacht and that didn't change his mind. But it did. It changed the way he was covered. It changed the way people wrote about him. And if anything, I think he was maybe a little surprised that people were actually writing about him as a saboteur and not as the brave hero of moderation.
And I think, you know, you mentioned the protests outside of his yacht, but I do think like the general air of accountability that exists today in the with the function of like people protesting, Supreme Court justices out of, you know, outside of restaurants. Do I think people should go with weapons to a Supreme Court justice's house or to, you know, Pramila Jayapal's, residence? Mm. Absolutely not. Of course. But the idea of holding people to account in the only way that the public can, frankly, you know, particularly for unelected leaders, but just also for ones that are, you know, who shape their lives and maybe from a different state. Right. I mean, like Joe Manchin is screwing over the country, and there's no opportunity for the vast majority of Americans. I mean, not vast. I mean, like 98%, 99% mm-hmm. of Americans to cast a vote about what Joe Manchin does. Mm-hmm. And so this type of stuff, I think it's important, right? Like, I mean, it in the aggregate, it starts to influence people who influence other people who influence other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe this is a tangent, but I do think, we had a long period where, I think especially post 9/11, where our political leaders were really, really cloistered, especially as they've gotten richer and richer. But people sort of forget that, in, you know, the 18th century or something, like that was considered politics to go yell at a person in public, to get a bunch of people together and yell at an elected official in public and then maybe like ride them out of town on a rail. Like that was just what politics, that was normal politics back then. And, I do think, you know, again, the fact that it's less violent now is probably in the aggregate a good thing, but, it has to be treated as normal for people to hear, you know, for powerful people to like hear from the crowd. That has to be a normal thing.
Well, because you look at, I mean, as Sam was saying, the psychosis of obsessing over the opinions of some columnists and specific kinds of columnists and that driving what you're going to do politically. If you don't break that bubble or puncture it a tiny bit with just regular people and actions like the yacht protests, then we all understand that it's going to remain as insular as it's been over the past few decades, honestly.
Yeah. And right. Again, like we're talking about, I think, a sort of mechanism here that seems, better than the alternative, but like, right, protests leading to a sort of change in elite opinion, leading to a senator changing his mind, is a pretty janky way to run a country still.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear. Like, I don't think that any of the protests that like normal people did pierced Manchin's bubble.
No,
I think what it did is it pierced the bubble of those like former Obama administration people, and they're, you know, because they're living, you know, outside that really, really small bubble that comes in an administration or right. in the Senate. They're exposed and they feel the heat from people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, you know, and they are the ones who pierce or are within Manchin's bubble, more or less.
This is the interesting thing right now is that, and this is what's different about the political environment is that it is, and not to use this derogatorily, I mean this in a neutral way, it's the normie Democrats that are up in arms about all sorts of stuff. And if you are in the administration, you can say you want, you're going to ignore all those people who are up in arms because they're not, you know, you're going after the moderate voters. But again, like, you know, just to use the example, and I'm not picking on them, but to use like the crooked media guys, like they hear, this is their base. This is their audience. Yep. They hear from them. And these guys are influential. They're very influential. They're hearing from all the normie Democrats in the country who are all up in arms and saying, what the hell's going on with this Senate majority that can't do anything? And then that gets translated into them advocating for different tactics. And then that gets translated into like people in power actually listening because it's filtered up in this way that it didn't used to. It just didn't used to at all. Cause there was like the people who did the protesting back then were like not taken seriously by anyone, but now people kind of have to listen to them.
And has there also been the push side of it is, or, you know, whatever, I guess it would be the seller side of, yeah. of that message has changed over the years in the way that you've just described. Has the buyer side changed? In other words, like, I'm thinking of the Senate that Obama had, and it was mm-hmm. a slightly different, you know, dynamic because you had like five or six mansions.
Yeah.
And, or more even, but that's my, I guess that's my question. Is that like, would this seller side where the pressure comes from normie Dems, would that have impacted, you know, the Conrads and the Buys and the, what was her name from Arkansas? And, you know, the, there were a bunch of them. Would it have affected them or no?
I don't know. It's such a different atmosphere. The politics are so different, right? Because I think it would have, it's kind of a common narrative in left wing critiques of Obama that he sort of demobilized that sort of base he had created. And I think that in a much more old fashioned and analog way, it would have affected them if they had been hearing a ton from their constituents, but no one was telling their constituents at the time. No one was telling them, like, call up Evan Bayh and tell him to stop acting like that. There wasn't a force that was reaching the sort of, you know, the Bayh, Evan Bayh base at the time and telling them to act like this. I don't know. It's hard to say.
So, I mean, the bottom line for the climate, in my mind, the climate portion of this bill is that it's going to reduce emissions by 40% by 2030. That's 10% less than Biden had sought to do initially. But again, you know, this is a baseline. It's not inconceivable that Democrats pick up a seat or two in the fall. That seems like a possibility, not necessarily a probability, but a possibility. I think it's unlikely they'll hold the House, but one never knows.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe things can improve from there, but as a baseline, it's better than we were 2 weeks ago, without a doubt. You also have the fix on the ACA. You've got some measure of Medicare negotiating for drug prices. Schumer says they're going to put the insulin fix in there as well. Mm. It's also conceivable that, you know, maybe a couple other pages get added to this reconciliation. Who knows?
Or taken out.
Or taken out, to be fair, as well. So
by cinema, yeah.
We will see. So, you know, this is still very much a work in progress. But if it turns out like this, it is it's better than it was 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
I guess is the best to say for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the CHIPS bill, we heard from, somebody who worked in that industry, and there's certainly some, I think, legitimate questions as to whether this is going to help. And it's, you know, in some respects, it's a subsidy, to these companies that where we get not much in return. But at least on some level, there's an attitude of like industrial planning, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, there is just these bills, as insufficient as they are, reflect, it seems to me, a slightly different perspective on the way that government should function.
Right.
That is at least headed in a trajectory that we haven't seen in, I think, you know, 40 years from the Democrats. When we talk about trajectory here.
Yeah. Yeah. And right. Like the CHIPS bill, I'm with Bernie in the sense that, like, if we're going to subsidize this stuff, we should get more return from it. But you are,
agreed.
Yeah, but you're totally right that it reflects. I mean, the very idea of you know, it's a rejection of globalization in a sense. It's saying like we you know should be doing this manufacturing here at home, and we're going to pay for it. And not the best way to do it, but it does signal a shift. And you know, the fact that it was this bipartisan deal is interesting too. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It feels on the one hand like, yeah, all right. So things are changing and obviously way better than 2 weeks ago. And it also feels kind of like clock is ticking. These are the last things government's going to do. Like, yep. What do you want the last things government to do to be?
There definitely is a feeling like that. And we, you know, that story came out about the Schedule F reporting that I guess Axios did. And, you know, Trump's plan, which is really a Republican plan, obviously. Yeah. Trump wasn't sitting there going like, what if there was a way in which we reclassified civil service? I should have thought about this 3 years ago, but it just came up now. It's obviously a Republican plan. All the Republicans have signed off. They're giddy at the concept of basically turning our federal government into Tammany Hall. We're looking at these Senate races now. Give me your sense of like where the Democrats are in terms of like the fall elections, because there doesn't seem to be. And we're going to be talking in just a couple of minutes to Lucas Kuntz, who's running for U.S. Senate in Missouri in a heated primary in Missouri. And I think he has, if he gets the nomination, which is, you know, certainly not a lock. He's running up against a self-funded billionaire. I'm not quite sure. It may take the Republicans, you know, to nominate Crichton, but there's a chance that starts to come into play. And 6 months ago, the idea that Missouri was like a possible pickup, forget about it.
Would have been crazy, yeah.
Would have been crazy.
Right. I mean, you know, we remember 2010 when Republicans primary voters cost themselves a lot of elections, basically. But, I don't know. It's really hard to predict, in part because polling seems completely broken. You know, like I think the polling like field has not recovered from the last few cycles. So it's hard to predict. I think the national environment feels a lot less dire than it did a few months ago. And again, it's happening because of conservative overreach. And what I would say is that like this is a time. You know, Democrats are going to want to run on, especially if they get this passed. We'll see if they pass this deal. They're going to want to run on. They're going to want to run on chips and infrastructure, and they're going to want to run if gas prices keep falling. They're going to want to run on that. But this is a time, and I think Brian Boyler just wrote this too. This is a time to actually for Democrats to actually do a national campaign hammering on the social extremism of the right because it's out of control. And when they focus on kitchen table issues, they are seeding that ground. And it's not actually popular. Like, these things are not popular. And so that's kind of has been my feeling that's been growing over the last few weeks. Like, well, definitely run on the accomplishment. If you manage to do something, run on it. But don't shy away from, like, actually making this a culture war in your favor.
I don't necessarily think that they have embrace that final part yet, though, Alex, because I just feel that there is this sense among this very, I don't want to say geriatric, but old, fossilized Democratic leadership. That's worse.
yeah, that fossilized is actually worse than geriatric.
But it's more fun to say. Yeah. Fossilized Democratic leadership that, you know, they are, I think, often under the impression that even saying the word abortion is something they should stay away from. They're on the, we're pro-choice, we're pro medical privacy, not healthcare is a right or anything even close to approaching that kind of thing. And particularly on these anti-gay, anti-trans bills we've seen throughout the country, I just feel like there has not been any effort at a coordinated response. And they seem to be allowing the, you know, giving the Republicans enough rope to hang themselves to that degree with their extremism. But I that is a defense approach as opposed to making the case in and of itself that they are extreme and insane.
You're totally right. That is their strategy. It's self-impeachment, right? This has been their strategy. It doesn't work, but this has been their strategy. Republicans will hurt themselves by being so extreme that they naturally get punished for it. And that's why I'm saying, like, for once, like, listen to your focus groups, like, actually do the thing we accuse you of doing and be focus group driven and actually make the negative case, but actually make the case yourself instead of just saying, Republicans are going to get so wild that the media will say they're all extreme and all the voters will naturally come to the conclusion that they're extreme. Like, yeah, you got to actually make the case. So, yeah, I'm totally with you, Emma.
Let's play this this ad, because we pulled this ad. It's a leaked ad. It's getting some grief online. And I'm not so sure that that grief is warranted. I'm curious as to your perspective on this. This is a DCCC ad that is targeted towards Latino voters in Texas and three other states. And here is the ad. This is an audio ad. I'm curious as to your take on this.
Oh, my back and neck hurt.
That's because you're working too much. Calmate. You should slow down.
I can't. I need to make more money. Look, with gas prices through the roof and my kids needing daycare, it's not enough.
Don't worry so much.
I'm just so stressed out, and I don't know what else to do.
What you could do is vote for Democrats. These Republican extremists have no plan to help us.
But Democrats seem so out of touch.
Not true. These MAGA Republicans are only working for rich people. Democrats know firsthand that even small price increases are hard on working families like ours. Democrats are finding solutions, unlike the Republicans. Calmate. What you could do is vote for Democrats.
Pay for Biden.
So what's your impression on this? Because to me, it sounds like they did focus groups where they found that people think Democrats are out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know that Democrats have three branches of the government. Mm-hmm. And that's what this ad seems to reflect to me. And and I believe that. I believe
not true. Not true.
I believe that there are more voters out there who feel that Democrats are out of touch than know that they have control of the three branches of government.
I think you might be right. I mean, I'm totally of two minds on this, not just because it's kind of like all radio ads cringy.
Yeah. Right, like, right, of course.
I think it's absolutely the case that a really solid message is, it's true, people think Democrats are out of touch, and you can complain about it, or you can run an ad where you say, you think Democrats are out of touch, Republicans only work for rich people. That's a solid message. That's like a message I'm 100% behind. At the same time, I can understand people who are like, if people are upset about inflation, let's not, and gas prices, and they blame the president for gas prices, and the president's a Democrat, like, let's not make that more salient by running ads about gas prices. But I actually think this is closer to what they should be doing than the other way around.
You know, I'm not convinced of that.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced because, like, look, you're not fooling anybody.
Right.
Right. Like, gas prices, like, it doesn't matter what you say in your ad. I know that gas prices are higher than they should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't matter what you say in your ad. Like, there's some, you know, I'm working too hard. And so on some level, I think there is value in Democrats acknowledging it. The really valuable thing would be if they had the ability to sort of like, you know, fix those things. I don't think with gas prices. Incidentally, Exxon today announced record-breaking profits. And, you know, every Democrat should be out there today. I know that they're feeling their oats about the Senate bill, and maybe they want to just lay low and not upset Joe Manchin and criticize the fossil fuel industry or whatnot. But next week, you know, after that bill is signed or whenever they get this through reconciliation, I guess a couple of weeks from now, they should be out there hammering.
Oh yeah,
Exxon.
Yeah.
I mean, in a big way. But you've got to acknowledge these things.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can't like, you know, you have to acknowledge these things, and I think there's value in doing it because it's the Democrats realizing like, well, we don't have the greatest message, but we do have a good message, which is they're lunatics.
They're lunatics. Yeah. And if anything, I wish that ad would hit that harder too, where it's like,
agreed.
You could have a version of that ad that is like, yeah, you're worried about inflation and gas prices, but like they're concerned, they're not going to do anything about inflation and gas prices because they're worried about, drag book club at the library. Like that's their concern right now. Like they're off the rails. They're worried about canceling Dr. Seuss and not caring at all about the economy. But we're the ones who actually want to do something about it.
I'm not sure necessarily, to be honest with you. Like some of those Latino communities.
Oh yeah, for a Latino community focused ad, but yeah, for a religious one, but yeah,
tend I think to be more religious, socially conservative.
I just think that there's a version you could do where you could say like they're focused on unimportant things, not just like you know, they're focused on things that don't have any effect on how much you pay for gas.
If they were to, if they had an opportunity to redo it, they would be like, they're voting against our vets. You know,
exactly,
I mean, that's what I would, I mean, in terms of just like, but it's interesting. There's definitely sort of a, if this Manchin thing holds and the reporting is correct in terms of what influenced him, you know, there at least is sort of some type of blueprint on how you can influence these things going forward. And it's encouraging to see, you know, Chuck Schumer do something.
Yeah.
for once. Let's talk a little bit about the economy. We just have a couple more minutes here. For two quarters in a row, we had negative, I guess, growth. But not by a huge measure. There is some controversy as to whether we're in a recession at this point. First off, we should say, like, I don't know what you expect when the Fed pursues a policy that is like, we're headed towards a recession, but hopefully we're not doing it well enough that it'll actually cause a recession. Like, that's the strategy.
That's what soft landing is, right? Yeah. We're going to like, we're going to head towards a recession, but we hope not to actually trigger a real one.
With that said, you know, I was reading Dean Baker and he was basically like, we're not in a recession. There is not, and you know, unemployment is low.
Yeah.
Inflation is a problem, but there doesn't seem to be any.
But inflation on its own does not, that's not a sign of recession on its own, right?
No, not at all. And in fact, theoretically, inflation is a sign of, you know, an overheated economy.
Right.
That is growing too fast, or at least the demand is. Supposedly, I think we're in just like a, this is a little bit sui generis because of the pandemic, frankly. But the demand is still holding up. And so it's it really becomes more of like a press story until we get a couple of months out and have a better sense of where, you know, whether the Fed policy is actually going to work and drive us into a recession.
This is the goofy thing about it, is that like, are we in a recession or not? Is legitimately just a like thing for people to argue about on the internet, right? Because like the economy exists, it is what it is, and calling it a recession or not, is just a way for like one side to score points on the other in terms of like what we label it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm not Dean Baker, but there's still low unemployment and there's still a lot of household spending. There's still a lot of consumer demand. It doesn't look like the recession that I have lived through in the numbers or in real life. And as you say, I think it's a really weird moment where we have completely unprecedented economic conditions causing all sorts of insane supply side issues, from a pandemic to a European war to lots of other things. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, and again, this gets back to the chips thing, that as problematic as I think, you know, we both agree that, like, if we're going to invest in these companies in this way, like, I want some equity.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, you know, I want, you know, I want something.
I want something in return, but yeah.
I want something more out of this deal. But the idea that we're starting to address questions, like, that we're starting to accept that the federal government has a role to play in ensuring that our supply lines are functioning, even if they're doing it, you know, and there are definitely shortcomings with this bill in that sense as well. But at the very least, like, there is the larger question, the meta question of what role does government have in ensuring that, you know, we have access to certain things that, you know, we need in a modern society. That's a good thing, I think. And you know, that's, I guess, a silver lining from COVID.
I mean, look, there's not a, yeah, I mean, I do kind of still suspect the Fed is going to, you know, push us into a recession just because that's what they do. But there is there. I remember making a bunch of, you know, economists, especially like mainstream ones, mad when the White House was blaming price gouging for inflation. And it's like, good, make them mad. That's at least a sign that, like, in some sense, in a communication sense, at least, Democrats are on the side of this that is saying, like, we do not, the problem is not that you workers are making too much money and therefore causing inflation. Like, that, at least politically, that's not the message they're pushing. But yeah, there's a long way to go there.
All right. Well, Alex Perine, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being here. And I have to say, like, this is the most optimistic, I think, conversation we've had in probably, like, maybe a year.
In maybe a year,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe 9 months or something.
Yeah.
And that's in, I mean, that's good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Just calm down.
I can hear the, yeah, I can hear the
you
laugh.
Can you calm down?
Yeah. Calm right. down.
Yeah. You seem really excited about that. All right. Well, yeah. I appreciate it. Alex Perine, always a pleasure.
Of course. Thank you, Sam and Emma.
Thanks so much.
It is, right?
Yeah.
It is the like, this is,
I mean,
the yeah. most.
I also, I, yeah.
Let's see how it ages.
We'll see if cinema sinks it. And I'm pretty sure that those most climate experts are saying that the 40% 2030 reduction is pretty optimistic. Well, and a
last
lot of
time
it's...
I felt this way was when I thought the Timberwolves were going to beat the Grizzlies in the NBA playoffs. And,
so. Wow.
All right. Well, look, we're going to take
that
a quick break.
Pretend well. Go on.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Lucas Kuntz. He is a candidate for the U.S. Senate in the primary in Missouri. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Breaking format, having an extra guest this week because we are 4 days away, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, from primary day. Is that right in Missouri? I ask our next guest. He is Lucas Kuntz. He is a candidate for the Democratic nomination in Missouri for the U.S. Senate. Lucas, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So this is your race is getting a lot of attention, more attention, I think, than people would have assumed a primary for Missouri Senate for a Democrat would be getting at this time. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real big contrast between me and my primary opponent. You know, we've got a billionaire heiress on one side and then a guy like me who grew up completely broke. You know, my parents were always paycheck to paycheck. They got married at 19 and 22, had four kids, right? And just, you know, I remember watching my mom write the check at the grocery store, ask the guy not to cash it. And then we went bankrupt from medical bills when I was a kid. And we made it because people in our neighborhood took care of us, you know, passed the plate around down at my mom's prayer group and brought tuna casserole by the house, right? And so we have a real contrast. I'm running to fundamentally change who has power in this country. Not taking money from corporate PACs, no federal lobbyists, no big fossil fuel executives, no big pharmaceutical executives, a really long list. And, you know, we got a real chance to actually win in November if we have someone like me, because the Republicans are going to have two people on the ballot. They're going to have a so-called independent who says he's the real Republican. And then they're going to have whoever wins the, you know, sort of Trumpy primary. So it's a real opportunity for us to pick one up.
And that's what I was getting at, I think, with this question. I mean, your race, and we'll talk about that, is fascinating to me. But the idea that we have a chance at a pickup in Missouri in the Senate come this fall, like I say, was not something that I think people would have anticipated 6-9 months ago. And so this is a real opportunity to make the Republicans at the very least play defense in a place where they were not counting on having to do so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to grind these guys out. We have really good policy positions. We got a really strong grassroots movement. And it's true. I mean, they are going to be in a Ross Perot, George Bush situation. And my plan is to run right up the middle and win this thing.
You were an Iraq war veteran. You tweeted about this today in response to the burn pits controversy, essentially, where Republicans have played politics with health care provided for veterans who are experiencing just terrible effects from their time in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. What's your response to that, and how do you think that your potential constituents would respond if they knew the true brutality of the Republican Party on this front?
Yeah, I mean, it's criminal, right? These are the guys who always found money to keep us overseas, right? They found $4 trillion so that we could go fight for oil in Iraq. $4 trillion, right? And then they come out here all the time. They're always like, oh, thank you for your service, support our veterans and stuff like that. But every time there's a chance to support us, they absolutely don't do that. You see that right this right now, right? I live next to an open-air burn pit. I mean, huge columns of black smoke all the time. We used to run through it and joke about how, you know, it was we should have been doing gas mask runs. Turns out it wasn't so funny, right? Like Marines, soldiers, everybody else, they have all these conditions that they're having to live with now. Many are developing cancer and have problems with it. And the fact that these guys won't support us when it's actually given a chance to do something real is just typical, right? It's just typical. And it's like, if they want to actually support us and thank us for our service, they should invest in us, and they should invest in the communities that we all signed up to serve, right? Like, I signed up to join the Marines because my community took care of me as a kid. I signed up for them, and they've let places like that just absolutely fall apart, and they treat us like trash.
Let's talk a little bit about your race. I've looked at some of the fundraising. Your fundraising, driven by small dollar donations, some are from out of state, obviously, some in state. To be fair to your opponent, all of her money came from in state. But
well, that's true.
It all because it all
came from one bank account.
It came from her. She has loaned her campaign at least $5 million. And so, I mean, she has the ability to go big on ads, I guess, and really, you know, drive that. But she doesn't seem to have much of like an on the ground constituency. Like from a policy standpoint, and she's been unable to articulate in certain instances policies because it sort of feels like this is that this decision of hers was a little bit whimsical, but give me a sense of like where you see the biggest differences in your policy set with her.
I mean, the biggest difference between, we have several, you know, she's not been very supportive of LGBTQ rights, particularly on trans rights and several other things. You know, she talks about how CRT is bad for the country and things like that. You know, she's really kind of taken a lot of Republican talking points. You know, used to host NRA fundraisers at her house, things like that. But for me, I think the biggest difference is just like who supports whom and where we come from, right? Like, in Missouri, people have been trying to claw back power for a generation. You know, we've been using ballot measures. We've been doing everything we can. And sadly, you know, everyday folks, they haven't seen the Democratic Party as a vehicle for doing that. And our campaign, my campaign, is a chance for us to show them how, when you don't take money from all these wrong people, you can actually stand for something different. You can do things differently. And instead, they're getting, you know, blasted on the airwaves by a billionaire heiress. Who doesn't know any policy or anything about how most of us grew up. And so I think the biggest difference, like really the biggest fundamental difference is Missourians want someone who understands what it's like to live like them, right? And the real national tragedy we have across the country, but also in Missouri very strongly, is that most people, they live paycheck to paycheck or one disaster from bankruptcy, just the way that I grew up. I mean, my mom 10 years ago got cancer, is working an hourly job. And like when you work an hourly job and you get cancer, you can't work your hours anymore. You can't afford your life. She had to move in with me. I know what this is like. I know the things we can do that can change that. You know, my opponent, she wasn't even for universal health care. She came out against it the other day. That's crazy, right? Like, that's not taking care of everyday people and everyday Missourians. And the other difference is I have a lifetime of service, right? I joined the Marine Corps to serve my community. I did 13 years, deployed to Iraq, twice to Afghanistan, did arms control negotiations out of the Pentagon, learned a lot about antitrust and defense contractors, and I really bring a lot of that to the table. And so, you know, when you talk about the difference on the campaign, the difference is she's written herself five $1 million checks. I have no family wealth, and so I'm relying on small donors. We actually have the highest percentage of grassroots donations of any campaign in the entire country this year. Like, that's crazy. Like, right here in Missouri, we've been able to do that. We've gotten the race on the map. You know, I'm on this program with you today. People talk about how they see me on MSNBC all the time. But I've also gone on Fox News three times in the last couple months. I go on all the conservative talk radio, and I talk about the same values that I'll talk about with you, because I believe that if we go into that medium, if we go into that space and we talk about what we stand for, we can actually win. And I'm the only person who's brave enough or willing to do that.
Let me ask. I'm sorry. Just let me. So a lot of the broadly speaking, you know, the values you're talking about, I think, align here with a lot of things that we talk about. When you get into the Senate, one of the things that is preventing the implementation of any legislation that reflects anything you're talking about has been the filibuster. Where are you on voting to get rid of the filibuster?
I think we need to get rid of it for everything, right? Like, right now, it's holding back veterans getting health care. It's holding back Roe versus Wade being codified. Like, we need to get rid of the filibuster and codify Roe versus Wade. And I mean, the real thing that makes me mad on Roe versus Wade is the fact that Missouri had the first trigger law to come into effect that says no exceptions for rape or incest even. Like, that's madness. And the Country Club Republicans, who were so excited, like you could see their excitement in signing this. The reason they were cool with that is because it's never going to affect them, right? They have money. They have power. They're just going to go out of state just like they've always done. They're going to send their families out of state. Like, they're going to get abortions just like they've always done. And the people it's going to hurt are the people in my old neighborhood who took care of me, who I've spent my entire life trying to protect and serve. And so, I can't believe that we're letting the filibuster stand in the way of basic human rights, the opportunity to vote, right? We can't pass voting rights right here. Like, this is unreal. We're developing a two-tiered system of rights where if you got wealth, access, and power, the world's your oyster, right? You can buy an election. You can do whatever you want. And if you don't, you have no real opportunity. I'm telling you what, that's what it looked like in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's not my country. That's not what I wanted to be here. That's why I'm running this campaign to fundamentally change who has power, because we have to do things like that. And I'm telling you, the filibuster is the number one tool for the people in the status quo to keep things just how they are, where they're not working for everyday people. It's just fewer folks that they have to buy off with campaign contributions. And I think we need to get rid of it.
You said that you learned about defense contractors from doing some work alongside them. What were some of the lessons that you learned about the way that the military-industrial complex works?
Yeah, it uses monopoly positions and power. It uses their strength with members of Congress. It uses the fact that most members of Congress on the Senate and House Armed Services Committee own defense contractor stock to get leverage and to get what they want, to squeeze out small businesses, to rob the taxpayer. It's crazy. Like, there's this one company I helped with some hearings on the background in Congress on, where it's called TransDigm. You know, every couple of years, the Department of Defense Inspector General looks at the defense ecosphere and identifies places where there's a single point of failure. So they're like, you know, oh, this O-ring for an aircraft, only one person makes it. Only one person makes chaff. You know, they figure this out and they say this is a threat. Well, what we've seen is these big defense contractors, they actually read that report and then they go buy those companies where they buy what they're making, their production line, and then they'll increase the cost like 4,000%. And they'll say, well, military, if you want to accomplish the mission, you're going to have to pay us the extra 4,000%. Like, it's straight up criminal. You saw this with Raytheon UTC when America was going to, or when the Biden administration was going to do the infrastructure bill. Originally, they were going to do it by increasing the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. Now, mind you, it was 35 before Trump got hold of it, right? Raytheon UTC goes to all the members of Congress, goes to all the news media and says, if you do that, if you increase the corporate tax rate 7%, that's going to cost us $1 billion a year. And they told the members of Congress, they said, we're going to tell everybody that that money can only come out of our research and development budget. It's the only place we can take it out of. That's going to cut our research and development by 20%. We're going to tell everybody America's less safe. You killed soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen. That's what they said. Members of Congress blanched. They all own Raytheon UTC stock. Well, then Raytheon killed this, right? Killed our infrastructure. And then they went to their shareholders, their CFO, at the next shareholder meeting. He said, guess what? We have more money than we've ever had. We are going to shower you with $5 billion of share buybacks and dividends. That is a direct transfer of wealth from our infrastructure here in Missouri, where things are falling apart, to Raytheon UTC shareholders, members of Congress, my opponent, actually. And like, that's how they have power. It's the way they leverage it. They're too big. They steal from us. They take advantage of us. And they don't even give us good products. They kill small businesses and then shelve the products that they have. It's horrible.
All right, so you're super well.
I don't get along. I just whew. If you're really giving good on that, well, I get wild about it.
I mean, no, it was appreciated.
To be honest, we're there's some antitrust fetishism around here too, to be honest with you, but in these parts, and this is super encouraging. As a senator, what do you do? How do you influence that? Like, I think this administration, certainly more so than any in the past 40 some odd years, has been moving in the right direction when it comes to antitrust issues. Really, I mean, we may be, you know, in a better shape than we have been since Reagan in that regard, at least in terms of where we're headed. But how do you, as a senator, how do you enhance that dynamic where these massive monopolies that exist in both, and you know, a monopolistic behavior in the context of you're talking about it in terms of arms manufacturers, but also in the context of tech and in airlines. And I mean, we can go across the board. It's everywhere.
Big ag has destroyed Missouri.
And so what can you do from the Senate?
So there are a few things. One is we have hearings in Congress, right? And, you know, David Cicilline out of Rhode Island ran a bunch of hearings in the House Antitrust Subcommittee against big tech. They exposed enough evidence there for, you know, 49 state attorneys general to have lawsuits against big tech companies. Lena Khan helped run those. And you mentioned the Biden administration and antitrust. She's now the chairwoman of the FTC. That was a great move. you know, one thing we got to do as a U.S. senator, my job is to look at judges, right? Well, both parties for a very long time have been putting corporate hack judges into our federal judiciary who don't enforce things like the Packers and Stockyards Act. We're talking about Big Ag. They don't enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act. They'd use this Borkian economics and Milton Friedman attitude to absolutely gut small businesses and empower these big corporations. And so one thing that I'm going to do is I will never vote for a corporate judge. I don't care who puts the corporate judge against me. You know, these lawyers that come out of corporate law firms and are wrong on antitrust should not be in our judiciary anymore. They're literally helping these companies strip our communities for parts. So that's a big one. The hearings are a big one. I have a rewrite of the Sherman Antitrust Act that I'd like to put forward. You know, there are different people on big tech or big ag who I could team up with to either pass or propose legislation. You know, John Tester's really big on the big ag stuff. I think Grassley and Klobuchar are too. There's real opportunity here, especially on big tech as well, where we need to do things like repeal Section 230. You know, these guys are these tech companies, they're the big tobacco of the 21st century. They know they're doing harm. It's in all their documentation, and they do it anyway for quarterly earnings reports, except you can't even sue them because Section 230 of the Telecommunications Act of 96 or whatever it was protects them from lawsuits. So there are a lot of things that we can do. I'm thrilled for the opportunity to get there and do that. This is like a really core area for me. And I want to do that. You know, I guess if I could mention one more, you know, Katie, there's a cartel that runs the price of insulin. They've taken it from $25 to $275. Well, Katie Porter has a proposal to cap insulin prices at $35. And that's another thing that I'd like to support and be a part of.
Well, I got to say, you know, to have a senator from Missouri who has these positions would be a fairly, you know, a big change from what we've had in the past, in many respects, regardless of party.
Yeah, it'd be a game changer for us. It really would.
Well, so the August 2nd. Is the primary, correct? We're just
yes,
a couple
sir.
Of days
it's
out.
Coming right up.
So I imagine right now one of the big things you need is volunteers to come out and knock on doors and people to call into relatives in Missouri and tell them to get out and vote. Do you anticipate like a big turnout, or is this going to be an off year, you know, middle of summer, a small turnout type of an election?
Yeah, I expect it'll be a small turnout, especially in the Democratic primary. You know, there's been a lot of big flooding in St. Louis this week, too, which is going to probably hold the vote down. And that just means that as a grassroots campaign, we should have the opportunity to make a real difference. Every call that's made, every dollar that somebody donates, it helps us get out there. Again, we're going up against the self-funding billionaire who has no business holding a U.S. Senate seat, who's not going to protect everyday people, who knows nothing about antitrust or anything else, right? And if we're going to actually change who has power, we need volunteers, like you said. We need people to go to lucaskuntz.com where you can sign up to volunteer. We do phone banking. We're doing text banking. We are going door to door. You can donate there as well. You know, every little bit helps keep us up. Again, it's lucaskuntz.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, LucasKuntzMO, same handle on Instagram, and just help us get the word out. It's a very grassroots campaign, and it's a very unique opportunity to win a seat in Missouri with someone who's very, very different than we've ever sent there before and can actually do some real things to help the Democratic Party actually get a footing in the Midwest again, because the Midwest, we've been under economic warfare for a long time. No one here has stood up to that, and if someone finally does, Democrats are going to be heroes here again.
I can't tell you how much I hope you win this primary and then go on into the general election. And if we have the opportunity, hopefully we can talk to you again in the run up to the general election. The website we will put a link to at majority.fm. We'll put one in
Thanks,
the podcast
sir.
And YouTube description. Good luck wish you the best.
Thank you. And anyone from Missouri or who knows people there, please tell your friends. Let's make this thing happen.
All right, Lucas.
Appreciate
Kuntz.
It.
It is KUNCE.com, Lucas Kuntz. Wow.
It's a big opportunity.
I mean, just the idea that, like, we've had to endure, and I didn't want to, you know, the last thing I want to do is when we have a candidate on that we hope will win. You
bring
know.
Up the ghost of Claire McCaskill.
Yeah, I don't want to do that because, you know, I mean, this guy, I have no idea, you know, like, I he doesn't want to, I don't want to, there's no value in getting someone like that to, you know, malign the last Democratic senator there.
Yeah.
But there's value in me saying it. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, she has been the voice of what needs to happen to take back the Senate in the Midwest, you know, like her after having lost in, you know, in a much better environment for Democrats, to get this guy in who is about as knowledgeable, I would say, if Lukas Kuntz becomes a senator, he is automatically, and I've interviewed a bunch, you know, I've interviewed some of these people, but I've also like been aware, you know, like have he would be in the top 5 or 10%, I would say, like on day one, in terms of just awareness of how the government functions.
And that's both an indictment of our current makeup of the Senate and also praise for him as a candidate, because people don't realize how there are a lot of dumb people in the Senate, even though they like to cloak themselves in this superiority.
And I know there's a difference between vibe and candidate, but if we recall, in Missouri, the 2020 ballot measure, they supported a Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. Like, there might be some clamoring for a vision like this that's not just Claire McCaskill or like Roy Blunt.
Right.
The last, I mean, here's the story with this election. The last polling I saw, he was down by about 4 points, but there were like 22% of people who didn't know anything about any of the candidates. And, you know, somebody has the ability to dump $5 million into their campaign and get on ads. That's going to help them in a, you know, a low information setting, which is why it's so important. Folks, if you, I mean, and this is like one of those things where, you know, the person who wins this is going to do so with so few votes. I think that'll make your head spin. I don't know what the last off year election was in Missouri. Go see if you can look that up, Bradley, and just get a sense of like what the vote tally is, you know, total. But this is not going to be, you know, we're not talking millions of votes here, folks.
Yeah.
And I would be surprised if we're talking about multiple hundreds of thousands of votes, frankly, in the Democratic primary there. So if you have the ability to, if you know anybody in Missouri, if you live in Missouri, if you live in a state, you know, adjacent to Missouri, and you can get there and help take people to the polls. This is like, you know, dollar for dollar, the return on investment here could be huge. It seems to me, because again, not only is it rare to have a candidate like Lukas Kuntz in Missouri, frankly, any state. it's also rare that you get this opportunity where there is no sort of like, you know, in a redder state, where there is a weakness at the, you know, on
in
the
general
side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bradley, did you get any numbers on that?
So at least for McCaskill, so McCaskill's primary last was in 2018 before she lost, and she got about 600,000 votes total, but she was an incumbent. So I almost think that there might be a little bit less of a, there might be a deflation.
What year?
That was 2018.
Yeah, so that's also going to be
huge turnout year. Everybody was really motivated. I'm curious as to like what it was back in, I don't know, 2014 or whenever the other.
Yeah, let me check that.
Yeah, because 600,000, reminder, 2018, and the primary, I imagine, reflected that. You had the highest turnout of Democrats in the history of an off-year election.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Yeah, the Trudy Bush Valentine of it all is really a microcosm of how the Democratic Party either is going to be saved or die. Because if candidates like her can continue to just like buy in just because they have inherited wealth and swamp a candidate like this, like, I mean, that's how this happens.
And really, like, this is, you know, I don't know if the Chuck Schumer or the National Democrats are playing much in this primary, I haven't seen any reporting to the effect that they are. I mean, they may have a preferred candidate. I would imagine they want somebody who can self-finance. That's generally the way that they function.
Yeah.
But I don't get a sense that they're playing too much in this primary. And so this is just like, you know, a perfect example of the deficit of our system in terms of electing. Like, because, you know, if we had the ability to magically put Kuntz and Bush into the homes of every Democratic primary voter, I can tell you it would not be a close election.
No.
But we don't. And that is the problem. That is the problem with money. And when you got a guy who is not taking any corporate or PAC money, who will not look at an op-ed and say, oh, that's what I should be doing, but rather has a whole history and understanding of the way our government works and then is operative in that way. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got to get Andy Kindler to therapy. So we've got to get him through here, pre-therapy session with Andy Kindler in just one moment.
Let's give him something to talk about with his therapist.
Oh, yeah.
Inside. Oh, this isn't my therapy?
No!
Oh, what an actor.
Now, wait a second. Now, are those headphones? Like,
they said they would rather have wired headphones. Is this a prank, putting me on the show? You don't even have a
show,
probably.
No, but I just can't. I just wonder if you're not wearing those. Is that what you wear with your therapist?
Yes, because I listen to some internal monologues. I do subliminal therapy during her therapy.
Mm.
That's a joke that would rely on you knowing what subliminal meant.
Therapy within the therapy.
Exactly.
Is it therapy within the therapy, or is it just like multiple tracks of therapy going on at one time?
Therapy sensory overload.
How about this old reference? Like if I was a terrible comic. It's an enigma wrapped up with a thing in the other situation. Why are you mad at me already? Why am I
let me ask you this. When you do your therapy.
Are you Abby Hoffman? When did you turn into Abby Hoffman in the later years?
What do you
mean? Abby Hoffman at a dinner party, Abby Hoffman. You're still the hippie, but you got everything cropped in, and you may be putting a couple of deals together, like Jerry Rubin did.
Hoffman and Rubin toured against each other, the yippie versus the yuppie debates. Well,
Rubin took it to the next level, aggrandizement.
All right. I'm not even sure what that comment's about, although, you know, he's from Worcester, Abby Hoffman.
What's that?
He went to high school with my parents.
I
got a
Abby
chance
Hoffman.
To meet him. I got a chance to meet him in 87, 88. I can't remember when it was, and I was very excited about that. But be that as it may, let me ask you this. When you do therapy, do you do it in this chair?
Yeah, I do. You do, okay. I do it in this chair. I do it with this.
Let me ask you.
She gets the same background.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Has she ever said, Andy? We've talked about this audition that you're upset about not getting for a long time. Let me just ask you a question. What's going on with your backdrop? Has she ever said anything like that?
No, because she's not an insult comedian like you, Sam. I go to a regular therapist. She's a regular therapist. There's not no shtick going on.
Are you sure?
She is Jewish, though. She is Jewish.
Okay.
So there's something going on here. I don't know what that means.
Well, you're
culturally Jewish.
I know. That's my understanding. I'm not blown away by that.
Yeah, really. What a new take. I kind of feel Jewish, you know, as part of the group, but I don't like this. Who does like the spiritual part of Judaism? Nobody.
I am so curious as if your therapist is going to say, like, Andy, you know, your energy seems really different today.
Oh, she will.
She'll notice.
You're so jacked up.
First of all, I'm scared to death I'm going to be like 1 minute late, in which case she's going to say, do you care about your, do you care at all about your mind?
Yeah. So wait a second. So let me ask you this. Does your therapist does your therapist scold you?
No, my therapist is extremely nice. I have a good
therapist. You should probably talk to her about the anxiety that you had that you're going to be late. Like I've said over and over again, we're going to let you, you're right there. It's literally going to be just like click. Click, and then you're going to be with your therapist.
That's all I talk about anyway.
You've been nervous about this.
Well, Andy, that's all I talk about with her is that I'm late. That's the topic every time.
Did your mother scold you when you were late?
My mother was not there for me emotionally. She was extremely depressed, and she was not really able to, for example, mirror back when your little baby's going, and she's supposed to go, she was like. And then my father was like, yeah, you saw your mother. She went to therapy for 30 years. What did it help?
Well, wow. I'm going to do my best to mirror with you.
Sorry, okay. Emma. That was too much too soon.
I'm going to try and do my best to mirror with you.
No, I appreciate your vulnerability, Andy.
Oh, that was like I smoke Camel non-filtered.
So, Andy, This is the moment in our therapy where you feel gratitude because of the effort that Jim Brewer went to give us stuff to talk about.
Man.
We have mentioned in the past, Jim Brewer took revived his career. Although I have to say the revival didn't seem too sustained. But maybe it is. I don't know. He did a comedy special last month, and he put it on YouTube. Is that right, guys?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was a free comedy special. Was it free or?
Yeah, it was. It was. He has a Patreon, but this went out free. This is like an hour.
You should probably. You should probably tell people that he was considered to be one of the foremost political comedians of his day. On Saturday Night Live, he did a lot. He wrote a lot of the political skits.
No, he did not.
He did Goat Boy.
He did Goat Boy. He did Goat Boy. And played the super high guy in Half Baked,
which was hilarious.
When
I love
Dave
that
Chappelle as... wasn't anti-trans.
Yeah,
exactly.
Simpler times.
Simpler times.
Here is his comedy special. Somebody had to say it because apparently in his mind, nobody's saying it. But here is, let's play. I don't know. Let's just play the.
We're going to start with the open.
We're going to start with what he opens with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thank you all for coming out and risking your lives. Because there's still people going, you're not really going out in public indoors, are you?
Sorry, YouTube ad.
Okay, so there's an ad. We'll play through that. But we should say he's, mocking the idea that people would be nervous about COVID. And
but with a funny face, Sam. Emma, he doesn't say that. With a very funny, funny face.
I know.
Couldn't help but love the guy. It doesn't matter how many millions of people die because they didn't get the virus. That's not important. What's important is that he's a goofy guy and we're going to have a good time tonight.
Well, I mean, it just amazes me that you have over a million deaths in this country. You still have, what are we at now? Like 380 to 400? Are we over 400 a day now? In deaths, from COVID. And, I get that people are tired of wearing a mask and, but it's real. The idea that you're mocking people, I still, particularly with this latest wave, we're 438 daily deaths a day. That is six times more than the flu, incidentally.
You don't have to sell me, Sam. I haven't left a house.
It's just so
March
weird to me.
11th, 2020.
All right, let's continue on. He's mocking the fact that people might be.
I mean, that's the face, though, right? This is his only face. Yeah. Yep. Go deep into the chin.
Different than the Jimmy Dore.
The Delta, the Omega, the Charlie Brown.
Stay inside. This is never ending.
The classic scientists use funny names for things.
Charlie Brown. Excellent point so far.
How long am I supposed to stay there?
Oh, my God.
Incidentally, there has not been a lockdown in this country for 2 years.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you know what the thing is? Can I just say one thing? Because I have always despised Lorne Michaels, and I do it every day, and I have an altar and everything. You know, everybody goes, oh, Lorne Michaels, he's the comedy whisperer. He doesn't know a goddamn thing. I'm sorry for the language. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He wouldn't know comedy if it fell in his soup. He goes out and gets Jim Brewer. He puts Jim Brewer on. For what reason? We don't need – Saturday Night Live is not the home of – Well, I know sometimes.
All right, continue.
I'm sorry, I'm okay now.
Okay.
Safe! Yeah.
Just to pause it real quick, there's not a country on Earth that has more than a million deaths from COVID total besides the United States.
Hmm.
That's what he's celebrating. Why don't you guys get that? He's having a good time. He's going, yes, number one.
Well, the vaccinators, you were real cocky a couple months ago. You, I got vaccinated. Got my second shot April 19th. I can't get sick from the corona. I'm vaccinated. See, this
sounds like my bitch.
I'm vaccinated. I'll even lick metal. I'm not afraid of anything.
This is so true.
Never came from FOMO. Never did come from licking metal. So
I don't have to wear a mask.
People vaccinated are getting sick.
What? You need a new booster. What?
There's that face again.
Who wants a shot? Who wants to see a ball game? Ooh, 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 ooh,
ooh. Oh, it's a cockatoo.
That's a walrus.
Oh, he's not
saying anything.
No, he's not saying anything except for he's saying, like, it turned out like this, the virus is still dangerous.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So he, what is his, you know, it's unbelievable to me. Like the other day, I was, it's got the sub-variants getting big here in Los Angeles, and I had to go into a store. It's like, oh, I'll put my mask on. Oh, and then when the sub-variant isn't around, I'll take my mask off in certain situations.
Oh,
I can't
that's
even
so
believe.
Classic.
I can't even believe we live in a, this just can't be happening, that we live in this country like this.
What's also interesting is like, where's all the horrors from the vaccine?
Yeah.
Like all the cost associated with people getting vaccinated. What happened to all that? Like, wasn't wouldn't there have been now, according to all these people, just a huge amount of like horror stories about vaccine?
What happened?
Yeah, exactly. And none of it.
They've abandoned that.
Gone.
It's mostly just now the vaccine doesn't work. How arrogant were you? You said that it would be a silver bullet and COVID would go away as soon as everyone got vaccinated, and no one said that.
And we have to say, like, the vaccine does work in the sense that you get less sick if you have it.
Yes, it reduces symptoms and spread.
Can we?
You have to get vaccinated. Don't be on the fence about it, everybody.
Can we play a clip?
It's science and stuff.
Can we play a clip from the comedians out there who are doing that huge riff on all the idiots who said that the vaccine was going to hurt. Like, can we play a clip from that comedian?
Yeah. Ooh.
No? All right, let's go. Let's keep going.
Ooh, I guess I'm safe now because I've been vaccinated.
More? Do we want more COVID bit or more about him talking about people getting offended?
Yeah, I think we move to the offense part.
He's already milked all his COVID material.
We're still milked.
If anything, life taught me the last 2 years is we don't know anything what's around the corner. You make all the plans you want. You get a bit of CEO. Your jobs are shut down. We have no clue. How quick life just goes, bloop! Which made me crazy how many people they would put on the screen and media are getting offended. Everyone's offended. I'm offended by this, and I'm offended by that.
Pause it. Don't keep us up on screen. I'm just, Andy, you're a professional comedian. How does you not knowing what life is going to bring next segue into people are getting offended on TV.
I've seen Jim Brewer perform in, way back in the great clubs on Long Island in the late 80s that Sam and I used to headline at. He does not seriously. And I mean this, it wouldn't matter that there's so many people in this world who are now willfully stupid. So it's like, I don't think he's a stupid person, but he is willfully stupid about these things. And so he's basically doing the same act that he's been doing forever. And he's probably just angry about ticket sales and stuff.
Well, another word for angry is offended.
Ooh, that's... Yeah. All right, continue. And blip. I think he got pissed. I sort of feel like he also sort of abandoned like the slow segue when he realized like, him going like, your world changes just like blip. And nobody laughed at his funny noise. And so he said, fuck it. Let's just go to the offended part. Let's go.
You make all the plans you want. You get a bit of CEO. Your jobs are shut down. We have no clue how quick life just goes blip. Which made me crazy how many people they would put on the screen and media are getting offended. Everyone's offended. I'm offended by this, and I'm offended by that. And I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about that. And if you're that person, listen, man, life is offensive, okay? My wife's been battling cancer for 12 years from food that she gets poisoned with that they feed us. That's offensive. We can't see the elderly because we may kill them, even though they got 6 days to live. We'll see you one day, Grandma. Stay behind the glass.
I feel much better with no human contact. Thank you, Dr. Fauci and CDC. And fear. Thank you.
I bet you she'd rather have that touch and hug and be dead tomorrow than do this in the restaurant.
Jesus.
What? What is that? You want one touch or hug? The hug one. I didn't get that one.
You don't get the pick and choose.
No. The joke was she would rather have some touch or hug. And then die the next day.
And then die of COVID, unable to breathe.
classic joke premise structure.
But you know what?
It's literally just like he's using all the sort of pretense of comedy just to deliver the same lines that like Rush Limbaugh would have delivered.
Yeah.
Or Greg Abbott.
I feel bad because I know, like, I gave a speech in that Montreal thing. It's a whole story. But so I was looking around to talk, to talk about him. And I know that his wife, I feel bad. I feel terrible. His wife is sick. She has been sick for 12 years. But the bigger point, yes, I feel bad about that. But then he goes back to giving people information that could kill them.
Yeah.
People will die. People will die from his show. Because his family members or whoever, they don't believe you can get a variant. They're not vaxxed. It's really more horrible that he is bringing his own family into it on that level, you know. But I don't think he's asking for sympathy, but it just makes me angry.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem for the CDC and the FDA, right? And instead we're fear-mongering against all those people as if they're trying to control us with fake vaccines.
In my mind, I just say, like, it's quite possible that Brewer could be on a show right now, like this, with a panel mocking a comedian who is saying, like, cancer's not real. Come on. Cancer's not real. Like, you know, go get some, you know, all you need to do
right. Is
just drink wine. And if you drank wine, you would be getting all you needed, the enzymes to fight cancer. Like, and he could be sitting there mocking them. I mean,
I'm listening to this podcast about, it's called Twin Flames, about these people who got fooled into thinking they could find their soulmate on, you know, through online dating or whatever. I just spaced out again. Go ahead.
That's not true.
Oh, no, you can, but I don't know where my point was again.
Okay.
Talking about this more with my therapist, that my mind does go blank, but I won't belabor. If I think of it, I'll say it.
Do we have another clip?
Yeah, I've got some more of this offensive stuff.
Okay.
Last week, two Marines, hand to God, came to see me with their no knees blown off over in Afghanistan. Came in wheelchairs, followed me around. We laughed.
Just in case you didn't know what it is.
But there's people literally walking around. Here's the thing with being offended. Listen. If you're easily offended, do yourself a favor. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for you. It means your asshole's tight.
I mean, this is the worst material I've ever seen.
It does.
This is like 1975 material. What's the matter with you people? Loosen up out there. You should take a laxative before you come see me. You're so tight in your ass area out there. I hate this kind of comedy. I hate Long Island. I hate that I was grew up there. I hate Billy Joel. I hate everything. I hate every club I ever... No, actually, Billy Joel's okay. But I mean, not really. But it's just all these guys like Billy Joel and Jim Brewer walk around going, yeah, from Long Island, I got the book of book of book.
Yeah. Well, he talks about another thing, like those who often say they're offended probably don't like that what we're doing with deploying troops around the world to get their legs, you know, off. But then he like says, well, I'm offended by that. Well, okay, I'm kind of offended by that too. But then he says, if you're offended, your butthole's tight. So is Jim Brewer's butthole tight when he sees like
and also,
guys with legs blown off by war?
Right.
He's doing the old bit with a new bit. He's trying to figure out how to get that bit that he's always done into this bit.
That's what it is. That's why we have a pro on, ladies and gentlemen.
I can give you the
we're sitting here going like, this feels like it's shoehorned, and that's because it's shoehorned.
He's evergreen, Jim Brewer. He's evergreen, so he can plug in. This is the same act he did in the 70s or the 80s or whenever the hell he was around.
Let's go ahead.
But funny, but he's got funny ideas.
Listen. If you're easily offended, do yourself a favor. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for you. It means your asshole's tight. It does. And if science is your God, science would tell you that's not good for your physical being. It means you're always stressed up and your ass can't work right. And you just can't wait to go, I can't wait to talk about this subject with my facts and figures that I learned. And we see you trying to escape, trying to let gas out. You can't even let gas out. That is so unhealthy for you.
Oh, no. Fart humor. He
you
wants
can't
to talk
hide
about
it.
Fart humor.
You can, we can hear it. It sounds like when you blow up a balloon. And you know when you let out a little tiny bit of air at a time?
Yeah.
That's what your
ass
sounds like.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what's going on here. He's pigeonholing his old fart routine.
It's unbelievable. I bet you could get a film. You could get a camera. You could get a crew. And you could actually see word for word you said that.
He also went back to the cockatoo. And that there was he's mixing the cockatoo and the asshole and the farting and the Fauci. I mean, there's just not a lot of thematic consistency.
And I just want to say, like, it's elitist to say other people shouldn't share opinions and that the problem with this day and age is too many people are sharing opinions. That's an elitist, misanthropic thing to say.
I love the idea, though. And he's like, God damn it, this fart stuff is just gold. But how can I get it into my anti-COVID, caring about COVID shit? Oh, I know. Of course. They're all uptight, and that's why they're offended. And then I can go into the fart stuff.
Well, you know, here's the thing. This is the way he does comedy. It's like that he just does comedy where he's desperate to get laughs. That's how he built that act. And it's not unusual. Many comics start out, they're desperate to get laughs. They don't like any silent. If you watch old Robin Williams, anytime there was silence, you go, oh. So this is the kind of act that you, so he's so scared. If he hears any quiet at all, he's got to go right back to the farts, right back into the whole thing. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it's sad. If it was 1 year in, it would be sad. Now it's right. Just a crime against humanity.
Right. Right. I mean, the irony about all of this is that you do get the sense that actually the tightest anus in the entire place is his. He's so worried that the material's not going to carry it. So that's why he's always making those faces. Continue.
It sounds like when you blow up a balloon, and you know when you let out a little tiny bit of air at a time? That's what your ass sounds like.
I am so offended.
Wow. I can tell you the thing.
Finger doing.
What this is based on is everyone loves, we all do this, folks. We all have body functions. We got to talk about it. Like everybody, you don't know that you fart. And I understand the whole topic. I understand it. I get it. There's nothing funny.
He's a truth teller.
The best comedians make you look at something in a whole new way that you never thought about before.
And to be honest, Saul would love this.
Right, but
the offended part, though. He'd probably get caught up in wait, why is he... He doesn't believe in COVID? How come we know people who have died about COVID? But the fart stuff is funny. All right, continue.
Oh, God.
Stupid.
Another ad. Okay. Oh, my God.
He really put a lot of ads in there.
Hey, freedom doesn't come free.
There's such
a special? That's a special?
It's a special on YouTube.
Brewer doesn't have any kids, does he?
That I don't know. I have not done a study on him.
I get the sense he doesn't, because he doesn't seem afraid that anybody's going to see this in the future.
I used to do his show back in the 90s. You know, he had a call-in show, and he was not political at all. He just go, Andy, how you doing?
Right, a radio show. He had a radio show. This was actually, I think, in the aughts, not the 90s.
Yeah, Andy. it wasn't terrible to me because he has a condition, obviously, with the sounds.
It's just like Fauci.
I mean, there's people out there going, you know, Bob, I'm losing work. I've been watching this new thing on the news, and I never really thought about it, but I've been losing my sleep and taking things out on the family. What's going on? You know that toy? Yeah. Which kind? The potato head?
Ah, knew it.
Ah, right.
Why is it called Mr. Potato?
I don't know. Wouldn't you have thought about that in the 40s or the 30s?
Can you imagine just waking up in the middle of the night? I can't take this anymore! Why is it called a Mr. Potato?
Yeah, so many people doing this.
Yes. Many people are saying.
Where's my picket sign? I want the world to listen to me.
I don't get the potato head.
He's working the pole.
It's a posit.
A posit, posit. Okay.
First he licked the pole, and now he's using it as a lance? Or a picket sign?
I don't know if there was any... I never heard of any outcry about Mr. Potato Head. It's just that the business that the Mattel or whoever puts out Mr. Potato Head...
Hasbro. There was a thing. There was an actual thing.
Said, we should just call it Potato Head because... literally the whole thing about it is that you can change its gender and its profession and all of it.
Yeah.
That's literally the game that we built.
Yeah, because if you accept that it is just Mr. Potato Head, when you put like the lips on and the big eyelashes, what that you're saying, like Mr. Potato Head must be cross-dressing, as opposed to saying this could just be Mrs. Potato Head now.
And then he just mentions the controversy. It could have been Dr. Seuss. It could have been anything that the right wing has been upset about it. Because it's really they're being upset. As opposed to like,
it's an imaginary
people.
Like woke person who's
insomnia
protesting about Mr. Potato Head. The
can't
only
sleep at night.
I mean,
he
yeah,
cannot sleep at night.
They've been doing this since the 70s, right? They did it with the NPR, and I mean, but in the old days, you used to be. I hated them. I hated when Giuliani did the went to the museum, but at least there was a. A thing with a piss thing that he got. It's disgusting. Yeah. This is so. Who in the world could get agitated about this except maybe Fox News 70-year-old people?
And then he gets to integrate his entire fart thing. Like, oh man, I could actually stretch this out. This used to be my like 7-minute chunk. It's now like my 23-minute chunk. All I got to do is like, I got to say, Dr. Seuss. And then all I got to do is, like, say, Mr. Potato.
So why is his pinky in and around his asshole? Do we have an understanding?
No. That's just a chapter 17 of the comedy book. He's indicating physically when he shows that, then you can almost visualize the fart coming out.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
the pinky is the distortion.
So Christopher in Hawaii says, Brewer does have kids. I remember seeing him live in Peekskill in New York in 2017 while he was still pretending to be a pothead and riding that half-baked fame. He had a bit about how his kids were addicted to their phones.
Oh,
that's a good thing to clock, because the pothead thing, I mean, that was why I rented that for sleepovers when I was in fourth grade. Like, the pothead thing character was very funny to, like, you know, children.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
He's not smoking pot anymore. That does disappoint me.
I don't. Was he ever a big pot smoker? I think I heard that it was a big phony.
Oh. I know. I never saw the movie Half Baked. Is that with Chappelle?
That's where
him?
It comes from. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he certainly didn't get any insights from smoking pot. He didn't get any creative ideas.
No.
He's not relating to it that way.
He doesn't strike me as a pot smoker. I'll say that. He strikes me as somebody interested in other kind of substances.
I don't know. He's. I think. Let's not make the mistake of reading too much into who he is.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who's making a decent amount of cash by mentioning a right wing grievance and then making a high pitched fart noise after it. And you know, not a bad way to make a living. You know, it's just too bad that it actually has to be videotaped and people see it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of tumult in the right wing. They go, I don't know, can we get someone, does a shorter fart bit and then goes into some? I mean, I don't see how effective this is even on the right, really.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, like how many, this has been out for about a month. How many views would you expect that to have? Just guessing.
I mean, 300,000.
I would expect more. It's not at a million yet. So
right, I would expect. It's always like, oh, 40 fart jokes, 40 million people, and there's a right, Facebook exactly. groups forming over it.
Yeah, but I mean, so he put it up on YouTube. What? Because there was no streaming service that was going to pick this gem up.
Yeah, I mean, just to comparison, Stavros Halkias' live stand up released also a month ago, 2.9 million views.
Oh. Yeah,
he didn't do the. He does a new no fart material. I'm assuming
He doesn't make fart noises. I don't think.
Giorno Giovanna, that so-called comedian in his echo chamber with his coke sweats, doesn't get that more people would rather no one get sick and suffer from it. My cousin fell for the anti-COVAX rhetoric, despite working at a club, and caught his fatal case of COVID, which orphaned his son. We lost my grandmother due to diabetes, but they both in life were of the thought that no one needing to get sick or die, and it's okay if people remained isolated. people like Bobby here look more like the edgelord kid who thinks he's funny when he's an ass. Both died during the pandemic. Folks are really complaining about the Brewer stuff. But fortunately, Andy, I have made a commitment to you. And I want to give you a little bit of downtime before therapy, like 2 minutes, so that your therapist is not blown over.
Did we give you something to talk about with her?
Yeah, well, I was already, it's like, they said they'd get me off at 10, but it's 10:56 now. And so what if I have to get something to eat before? I mean, I have to have something.
Oh, yeah, good. So I was already Andy, we love you. Thank you so much for coming on. We will see you in the future, and we'll get an update on your therapy.
I love you guys so much, and I'll tell my therapist. She'll be very happy you let me out.
Yes. All right, we'll see.
Have a great week.
Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen.
We love you.
AndyKindler.com. For more details.
What a king.
All right. I guess we're going to just Freebie Friday it.
Whoa.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We'll read some IMs. We'll do a little sound. We're not going to take any calls today.
Yeah, I'm just going to run to the restroom. Be right back.
Sons of bitches.
All right. Well, we may have some news on that up front, too. Emma,
maybe.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm going to go, and
one
I'll
shot.
Read some IMs.
Thank you.
Let's see. Elon Conniption, it's loaded for bear. What did I say?
I think you – didn't you say that? I thought you
– did I say we were loaded for bear?
Did you say or loaded to bear? I thought you said bear. Maybe I'm wrong.
Courier, 11 second, RIP to my Twitter account, apparently suggesting landlords belong in a wood chipper is frowned upon in this establishment. Well, they obviously are politically silencing you. Part of the landlords go into wood chippers ideology. Transistor, I'm going to stir the pot on this again because I haven't in a while. But what kind of pizza do your guests like best? We all know the right answer is that New Haven pizza is best, followed by New York buck a slice, and Chicago last. I mean, there's no controversy there. I think what you said is probably accurate.
Mm.
Champagne Commie, laugh my ass off. Not sure what that's. Truck Nuts, happy Friday, crew. Yesterday I turned 35, and now I have to submit my mail-in ballot. FYI, some scary non-governor candidates showing up in Michigan with big donor backings. Simadu Anderson running for Senate. Her only policy seems to be don't let trans girls play sports. Everything is reliant on the upcoming votes, our right to abortion, government workers working from home, trans rights, etc. Two kids in a trench coat. Hey, Emma, do you think you would consider switching to become a Jets fan if Zach Wilson started dating a woman from one of the Real Housewives, either New York or New Jersey? I have to ask her that question. NJ Mailman, the more I think about it, the more it becomes clear to me that Jimmy Dore would have been a copperhead during the Civil War, yelling about how the North had no right to invade the South and begging people to buy his weekly paper.
Lincoln, you're freaking tyrant. I can't believe nobody sees
we're gonna play,
extra constitutional.
We have a clip. We'll wait for – there was a study that came out. Well, I'll wait until Emma's back because this is just, again, the desperation to make money or, you know, and to fulfill and you know, one of the things that happens, and I'll wait till Emma gets in here, but one of the things that happens when you start to pop Emma up here, one of the things that happens when you start to cultivate a right-wing audience is you start to take your news from right-wing sources and you start to take your opinions from right-wing sources. And if you start doing that and have no history of ever having to read anything for your work, like Jimmy Dore, he would never read a thing. That was always my biggest complaint with him. When we called him a dum-dum lefty, it was an acknowledgement that he was of the left, but he's an idiot. And regardless of your ideology, if you don't do any work, when you do what we do here at all, you're going to say stupid things.
And that was that's been well documented from your outside perspective on it as well, but it was also well known within TYT that he was
obvious. Yeah. It's obvious. You know, like, and he thinks that what he's doing, you know, I'm going to read this tweet slowly and repeat it, and therefore it makes it seem like I know what I'm talking about. Here he takes a study that has been released, and the study shows they studied depressed people, and they did not find an excess of serotonin, or I should say an absence of serotonin. When you take a SSRI, a serotonin uptake inhibitor, it keeps the serotonin in your brain essentially, and from receding. Serotonin is released, and then it's essentially reabsorbed. It keeps it from being reabsorbed. Nobody's quite sure why SSRIs work. They only know that, you know, with ones that have been around for an extended period of time and others, what the side effects are and how dangerous they are. But it's quite, typical for people who go on SSRIs to play with the dosage, to switch to other ones because one might make them drowsy or one might make them feel jittery and switching them. So science doesn't know. But this research does not speak to the efficacy of serotonin uptake inhibitors. It talks about the relationship between serotonin and depressed people. And it doesn't address the efficacy of SSRIs at all, but that's not what right-wing blogs said, because they're still on their anti-COVID vax jag, essentially.
Yeah, this is anti-vaxxers branching out.
Yeah.
And here is, I give you, Jimmy Dore's latest.
A new study, The Serotonin Theory of Depression, a Systematic Umbrella Review of the Evidence. So they did a systematic umbrella review of the evidence.
I repeated umbrella view.
And who were they? These are researchers from the University College London. They conducted what they call an umbrella review of past meta studies. And they did systematic analysis of depression's relationship to serotonin activity. And it included tens of thousands of participants. I think that comes from The Hill. So here it is from this paper. It says, our comprehensive review of the major strands of research on serotonin shows there is no convincing evidence that depression is associated with or caused by lower serotonin concentrations or activity. That's exactly what Tom Cruise was just saying. He was saying there is no chemical imbalance. And now this paper is proving it.
I've heard other people say,
That is not what the paper is proving.
And also, he's citing Tom Cruise here. Tom Cruise.
People trying to cancel Tom Cruise now.
The reason that Tom Cruise is not in favor of, and I think he went on like 15 years ago, some rant against, he does talk about this. We'll get to that in a second. But Ted Cruz believes that Scientology and the power of Dianetics is what's going to actually save you from your depression. And so now that's the source that we're saying has the right idea about antidepressants?
Tom Cruise, not Ted Cruz, I think you might have said.
Did I say Ted?
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
Well, I'm not used to talking about Tom Cruise in this setting, but here we go, Jimmy Dore clip.
All right, I continue here. And remember, this is not what the study says. The study is only looking at one narrow thing, and it is actually a study of other studies.
Activity. That's exactly what Tom Cruise was just saying. He was saying there is no chemical imbalance. And now this paper is proving it.
I've heard other people say it and thought they were kooky for saying it. I've heard other people say that there's no chemical imbalance.
I thought for sure it was. So most studies found no evidence of reduced serotonin activity in people with depression compared to people without. and methods to reduce serotonin availability using tryptophan depletion do not consistently lower mood in volunteers. So when they got rid of the serotonin artificially, when they did that, they lowered people's serotonin levels. It didn't lead them to have a bad mood. So they're saying there isn't a connection between serotonin and mood. That's what they're saying. And that there's no evidence of that people with reduced serotonin is present in people with depression. Just what Tom Cruise was saying 17 years ago. Tom Cruise, almost two decades out in front of the rest of the goddamn medical profession.
Doesn't that like make you like just to even say those things, like even if the characterization of the study was accurate, okay? Wouldn't you say something like, what a coincidence? What a coincidence that Tom Cruise was right, because there's no way Tom Cruise knew any of this stuff.
Well, also, you couldn't say the Scientologists who told Tom Cruise about this were right, because that would sound immediately discrediting to an audience.
Oh, but not citing an action hero and saying that he was ahead of scientists by two decades when he criticized Brooke Shields antidepressants? That's science.
That's why Scientology uses celebrities, though.
I know. But, I mean, Tom Cruise completely buys that crap. You just need more electrical impulses into the brain.
And to jump up on the couch and scream at Oprah Winfrey.
Well, see, he doesn't need SSRIs, Bradley.
The amazing thing is the study was not at all about antidepressants. It didn't involve antidepressants whatsoever. And they just don't know why antidepressants work. But all of the evidence... You can go look at the Lancet. I'm looking at one here. Comparative of efficacy and acceptability of 21, and this is Lancet's coming out of Britain, of 21 antidepressant drugs for the acute treatment of adults with major depressive disorder, a systemic review and network meta-analysis. The summary is essentially that the best available evidence prescription of these agents should be informed by the best of it. Therefore, we aim to update and expand our previous work to compare and rank antidepressants for the acute treatment of adults with unipolar major depressive disorder. And their findings was that there was efficacy. And again, it's not clear why these things work, but they work. And it is... maybe the process of inhibiting serotonin, maybe there's like knockoff effects. But when you have people who are idiots who try and interpret these things because they want to overlay their, I hesitate to call it an ideology, but I guess it is on some level. They want to overlay their ideology onto things they don't know how to read, and they won't accept, experts reading it. He's literally citing Tom Cruise, who I can assure you did no research regarding this.
No. It is interesting too how they're trying to parlay this vaccine skepticism into broader skepticism about other drugs.
Yep.
And for me, this is an obvious attempt by someone like Dore and other influencers trying to appeal to the right wing. To get some of that bro science audience from Joe Rogan. It's like, you know, don't take SSRIs if you need them. Don't take your meds if you have bipolar disorder or you are struggling with depression. Don't do that. You just got to buy Alpha Force or meditate harder.
The right wing is blaming SSRIs for any school shooting that happens too.
Yeah.
That's their first thing that they throw.
Right. So it's mental health, but it's not it's the treatment of mental health. I'm still trying to parse out what angle they're going to go with on there, but I feel like they see a natural connection with prescription meds and anti-vax stuff.
It's super dangerous too. Again, we're in another realm where it's just super dangerous to do this.
Yeah.
Because antidepressants have saved, I don't know how many lives, but
And like that you would even go into this field, and then, you know, I mean, in before he complains about how people are criticizing him for just asking questions, but like about things that you are not, don't feel responsible for, actually. Like, does he feel responsible for people who didn't get the vaccine and got a monthly prescription to ivermectin instead? Of course not. He doesn't actually give a shit about any of this stuff, but he'll still be put upon and act aggrieved when people criticize him for it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I really don't know how someone operates like that unless they're, you know, I mean, his self-medication is really what it is. I mean, that's why when you need to drink to the extent that he does mm-hmm. and take other substances, that's why. That's the self-medication there.
But anybody else who wants to take SSRIs, that might be dangerous. Don't look at the, I mean, everybody takes substances. It's so ridiculous. Just gotta. Sometimes it's medicinal, and sometimes it's self-medicinal. In his case,
all right. Let's move on. This is another funny clip. So, this is really amazing. Fox News. We've cited this poll a couple of times too. I think it was CNN poll, and they did it with some other outfit. I can't remember who it was, and it showed something like 75% of Democrats want somebody other than Joe Biden run. And I think there was another iteration of it where it was like, Joe Biden's approval ratings also not doing well. The same poll also showed that Republicans don't want Trump to run, at least the majority. And Fox and Friends uses this poll to hammer Joe Biden for about 4 or 5 minutes. We're not going to play all that. But then they pivot to talk about what the poll says about Donald Trump. And then the alarm bells go off. This is actually amazing.
55% of Republicans or people leaning Republican want somebody other than Donald Trump to run. That's up 6% from their earlier poll.
And if the former president's watching, you should know those are just the numbers you're relaying. You didn't come up with those numbers, right?
CNN came up with them.
Right.
Ainsley said that if this was a fascinating poll. It is. That's why we just talked.
Well, here we wow. are. Here they are. Okay, no. That would be bad enough. Like, they have to genuflect and they have to say, please, President Trump, don't be mad at us. It gets worse because then they're just saying, like, we're not responsible for these numbers. It's CNN. We're just reading the news. We just read it about Joe Biden. But then they get even scareder.
Yeah. I like how Ducey throws Ainsley immediately under the bus here.
Yep. Tell it to his boyfriend, her boyfriend. Go ahead.
55% of Republicans or people leaning Republican want somebody other than Donald Trump to run. That's up 6% from their earlier poll.
And if the former president's watching, you should know those are just the numbers you're relaying. You didn't come up with those numbers, right?
CNN came up with them.
Right.
Ainsley said that if this was a fascinating poll. We just talked about it.
And they are right as often as Haley's Comet comes by every 7 years.
So you're just saying all we talked about for the last 4 minutes is not accurate?
I'm just saying if Donald Trump is watching. And to see it, if Donald Trump is watching, just let him know we didn't come up with that number. That's what the poll said.
Absolutely.
Did we miss that part where Kilmeade says, like, and they're as accurate as Haley's Comet? And then Ducey says, well, wait a second. We just did a 5-minute segment on those numbers. Are you saying
and Biden being so terrible? Yeah.
And then Kilmeade says, well, my point is, if the president's watching, it's not our fault.
They're just inaccurate in this way, right? They're just inaccurate with the Trump stuff.
Go to CNN's manager, not ours.
Can you imagine, like, calibrating your news coverage on a program that is, like, one of the most watched cable news channel in the country to appeal to one guy and making personal appeals to him?
Literally,
on,
like,
your morning
wall.
Show?
Like,
yeah.
Fourth wall breaking.
Exactly.
Like, we're not doing that, seriously.
Trying to just make sure your coverage doesn't offend that one person.
We did apologize greatly to Bernie when we announced the results of Super Tuesday in 2020.
It's not our poll.
It's not our poll.
Sam, did you come up with that information or did you get it from somewhere else?
All right, continue.
About it, and they are right as often as Haley's Comet comes by every 7 years.
So you're just saying all we talked about for the last 4 minutes is not accurate?
I'm just saying if Donald Trump is watching, and to see it, if Donald Trump is watching, just let him know we didn't come up with that number. That's what the poll said.
Absolutely. I was talking to, I was talking to a pollster about these numbers, and they seem to be across the board regarding so few people on the Democratic Party want Joe to run.
It's just too soon to tell. There's so many different polls, and they all say different things. But the majority of the Democratic polls do say the majority of Democrats want a different candidate.
But didn't they just sample 360 people?
I think we have more than 1,000.
Yeah, 362 registered voters.
Okay, in the so not, not a big group.
So, it's not exactly 340 million, but I'm sure some scientists would make sense of that.
Oh, they really twisted themselves into knots there.
God, isn't that amazing?
And this is like the classic what we've been seeing Fox and Friends archetype, where like, the tension between Ducey and Kilmeade is like kind of coming to the fore. Ducey's kind of like, yes, I am a Trump supporter also, but like, do we have to do this fan service this like prominently?
It's odd too, because theoretically Ainslie and Kilmeade should be teaming up, but they're just so because they're kind of on the same page pretty much, but Kilmeade's such a little tool that they just are all infighting. I really think there's some juicy drums behind the scenes.
I bet when they cut, it's probably like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
I'd be curious. I haven't really looked into this, but I wonder who distributes Kilmeade's radio show. Because if it's the same distributor as Hannity, Hannity probably, you know, sort of has some influence over, you know, when he gets mad about it, Kilmeade could be worried about maybe losing an affiliate or two or something like that.
I mean, and I think Ainslie, when you hear her speak, everybody should understand that this is coming from the Trump people because of how embedded Hannity is with those same people.
No, that's pun like, intended. You're saying she's embedded with them?
Ah, damn it.
Nice. Yeah. That was pretty amazing.
You know you're in trouble if Kilmeade's having to teach himself about sample sizes on the fly.
So the scientists will figure it out.
I mean, we've got to now, to be fair, we do this when we talk about polls. We are very, very nervous about and trying to apologize in advance to John from San Antonio so that he doesn't. We just want to make that clear.
Yeah, we might get a stern tweet from John from San Antonio, and that would blow up our whole operation.
Let's imagine, as we pivot here, think about how much aggrievement must work inside of you if you are one of five people in the country who have the ability to overturn a pre-existing right that has been in existence in this country for 50 years, for half the population to have control over whether they carry a pregnancy to term, essentially dictating the rest of their lives, that it was essentially you stripped those people of their right to do that. And you thought to yourself, and this is just the beginning. Imagine how much self-aggrievement you must have embedded in yourself to be upset that you are criticized for it, even though you cannot lose your job under any circumstances ever, short of death. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you such a man. His name is Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito.
Over the last few weeks, since I had the honor this term of writing, I think, the only Supreme Court decision in the history of that institution that has been lambasted by a whole string of foreign leaders who felt perfectly fine commenting on American law. One of these was former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, but he paid the price.
Who are these people?
Post hoc ergo propter hoc, right? But others are still in office. President Macron and Prime Minister Trudeau, I believe, are two. But what really wounded me was when the Duke of Sussex addressed the United Nations and seem to compare the decision, whose name may not be spoken, with the Russian attack on Ukraine.
It's pathological.
And let's be clear where he is being feted. He is at the Religious Liberty Summit in Rome.
So this is his Scalia cosplay, right? I mean, he wants to be that guy. That's his. That this is the vacuum that he's filling. They're fundamentally the same, but Scalia would do these tours and speak everywhere and go international and drop any pretense.
But it's not cosplay. It's just it is who he is. And yeah. And I mean, they many of these guys are Opus Dei. They are fundamentalist Catholics. They, which I think some may think is redundant. He's knocking the British royal family too, I think is not, it involves, religion, associated with that. I would guess, to be honest with you.
Cause I was going to say, you're in like a, position that is equally as outdated as the British royal family is.
I don't think he has a problem with monarchy as he is in Rome at the moment at the Religious Liberty Summit, which I imagine he has made a visit to the Vatican. I don't think he has a problem with that type of... I don't think the hierarchy is the issue. I think it's probably the religious fundamental, you know, the religious aspect.
And the foreigner aspect, right? You don't get a say in what we do.
I mean, think for a moment if the idea of like, I don't know, pick a case. I'm trying to think of one that if KBJ, you know, they were overturned Roe v. Wade and then went to a rally afterwards. It's just not what the judges are supposed to do. You should not be going to an advocacy group on this issue. That is ostensibly a function of simply the rights that are afforded to human beings, right? Like, because advocacy, theoretically, if you're on the court, should have nothing to do with this.
Well, yeah, but this is where he can really let his hair down or let his beard grow, for that matter, in these religious conferences where you can drop all pretense. Hey, this was not about fundamental rights. This was about me delivering for you guys. And now I feel like I have the opportunity to speak candidly about this. And then comes the personal aggrievement, as you say, Sam. The world's against me, one of the 9 most powerful people in the United States. It really is. It's against me. I'm the guy that's the victim here. And he speaks with like such, I don't know if sarcasm is the right word, but...
Snideness.
Yeah,
like sniveling the whole time.
About the way that he arrived at this decision. It's so personal for him, and there's so many layers of just complete misunderstanding, or not misunderstanding, but lacking of fully grappling with the reality of how this is going to affect so many millions and millions of people. But it's really about my personal beef with Prince Harry.
Yeah, well, it's funny that this guy should complain about foreign influence, because we have this clip 12 years ago where he's talking about Obama's speaking in front of Congress, talking about foreign influence in Citizens United, and this is where Alito... The earliest thing I remember about his time in office.
Yep. No sound.
One second. Oh, wait. Is there no sound for that? Oh, crap. I guess our clip's bad. Play it. Okay. Just play it. Yeah, sorry.
So this is him when Obama was speaking at the State of the Union.
You can't really see what he's reacting to if there's no sound. So, all right. Let's go to the IMs and wrap this week up. Lefty Lucifer. The description on the live fun half is from yesterday, so y'all know.
Well, we didn't get around to the live fun half, but... You cheated your way over there. Good job.
We got to stop that. We've got to stop that. Should we play this clip of this guy on MSNBC? Let's play this clip. Should we do this? This is
Let's do it.
Okay, yeah, this is worth doing. As you know, the Republicans voted down the PACT Act. This was a bill to provide health services to vets. They did so because they were mad that Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer made a deal to do to pass some other legislation. They are now backing off this and sort of claiming it's like they voted for some technical reasons, but a little late to pretend that's the case. Here is John Feel. He's an advocate for veterans and 9/11 first responders with MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell.
Republicans love the soldier, but they don't love the veteran. And that's the bottom line. And again, politics and game playing at the cost of human life is unacceptable. And no matter what the issue is in this country, Americans don't have to put up with it. I don't care if you fall right or fall left. This is not about politics right now. This is about human life. So those who are going to tweet and text me and email me and say I'm this and I'm that, I am a human being. I'm a human being before I am a Republican or a Democrat. I am a human being before I'm an American. And when human beings suffer and you do not get involved and watch that suffering, you're as guilty as the party who is pushing out that suffering. And enough is enough. And to watch Lou Alvarez and Ray Pfeiffer and others, you know, Andrew, I've been to 191 funerals. Soon I'll be going to my own. And the fact that we have to continue to fight for veterans or first responders is proof that the Congress and the Senate in this country do not get it. And the American people should be fed up like John Stewart, John Field, and all of the VSOs. Pat Toomey said yesterday that the VSOs wanted him to block this bill. Every VSO organization was at that press conference today, and nobody stood with Pat Toomey. He's a liar. His wife should divorce him. His dog should bite him. And he should not get health care when he leaves and retires because he's a piece of shit.
Well,
she didn't quite know how to. He's not technically a piece of shit. We should be clear.
Just
on
to be clear.
Yeah, I mean, what does Alan Greenspan have a relationship with Pat Toomey? Probably.
But what I find fascinating about this is like this is a guy wearing like a Tiger Woods sport hat, and like I don't like regardless of what his politics are these are the people that the Republicans want to be alienating?
Oh,
like
yeah.
A guy like this, like that's.
Also, Pat Toomey's retiring.
Yeah, right. Oh,
why
God, right.
is it? I mean, this was an opportunity for him to not be on this side of things. But hey, you know, his brutality.
Well, wait a second. What do you think Pat Toomey's going to do?
Oh, he'll. I'm sure.
Well, honestly, like, what do you think Pat Toomey's job?
He's
is?
Going to lobby. You'd be a lobbyist.
I yeah. But I would imagine it's going to be involving having access to the Senate and to the Republicans in the Senate.
Northrop Grumman.
He is hoping that the Republicans will be in control of the Senate, and eventually they will be. And it's going to make him doing this for McConnell was worth, like, there's a number. Like, you could probably parse out exactly what the number is. I don't know if it's $500,000 or $1 million. I'm not saying it was literally paid it, but it makes his value to some company that much greater because he just did a big solid for Mitch McConnell and messed with this and took the heat for it. But, you know, I don't know why you can't have that same message with just healthcare.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that shouldn't be political either, that we price people out of healthcare and have people with medical debt,
regardless of whether they've served or
right.
not,
yep.
you know?
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
And we made the same point about abortion too. You need it's a much easier hill to climb if you're tying it into larger points about universal health care.
People should be taken care of, and there's interest groups that are very influential with Congress that don't want those people taken care of.
Let's go to the IMs. Dr. Rumar. This is why I don't trust white DJs. Did y'all peep John Cornyn's pronunciation of reneged? Did you not find that suspicious? This white brother, Sam, needs to put down the drugs. Send me a tenth of your net worth as reparations, and you'll feel much better. Sleep well at night. I'll be emailing your program with my bank info. Well, just put your Social Security. Just tweet at me with your Social Security number. I'll make sure you get the information. Also, your mom's maiden name and your favorite color. Have you read my email? What Brewer doesn't realize is that a tight asshole makes anal more exciting. I mean,
okay.
Where's the lie? The fan from Toronto thought you guys might find this interesting. Big news in Canada today is that Buy American incentive for electric vehicles was changed to Buy North American. The Buy American provision was widely seen in Canada as devastating for automobile manufacturing here. What's clear is that Manchin intervened to change this, and while I don't particularly object to it as a Canadian, what I think is very interesting is that Canadian lobbyists and officials zeroed in on Manchin as the lever to change this. Oh, that's fascinating. Sadie Stone, shout out to Emma for embracing the Stone Age days of ice cube cooling.
It's not voluntary.
I don't think they had ice cubes in the Stone Age either.
I doubt that. Here, Suturiut. It's loaded for bear, Sam, not loaded to bear, as in getting ready for a hunt and bringing the big guns. Oh, loaded for bear. I see. Well, I like to take it to the bear. Lake Jen, hope your air conditioning rides before the flooding rains do. Oh, I like him. He's a firecracker. He's got my vote. Coots was better than I thought he was, even.
Yeah.
I was impressed. That dude, right at the tip of his fingers, understood, you know.
What points to hit.
Oh, but just had deep knowledge of what he was talking about.
Yeah. It's a good opportunity.
We should have more lawmakers who have had to take in a parent because they were unable to pay medical bills. I think that would be quite a change.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Disco Stu, what do you think about politicizing the Fed as a strategy? I mean, it's obviously a political institution, but the Fed is filled with conservatives, and that ideology drives policy in a way that seems to help the ruling class and screw over the average person. It seems to me the Fed could be a good boogeyman to pin negative economic news on. Yes, and I think there's actually, you know, it's important that we have more reform, frankly, involved with the Fed. Keeping it independent feels to me like, or as independent as it is, let's put it that way, without some type of representation for other people besides bankers, is highly problematic. And I have to say, like, I'm still trying to figure this out and read more on it. But I think there's a revelation about what's going on here with their response and the fact that there is no word to distinguish between inflation that comes as a function of too much money in a system for a productive capacity versus what we've experienced, which is demand exceeding the ability at this moment because of COVID and because of the implications of COVID. So whether it's a shutdown in destroying supply or things got reoriented in a way and haven't snapped back in a way, the capacity is there. There's not a single, you know, machine that needs to be built at this point to produce what we need produced. It's just a question of whether you want to staff at a certain price or whether you want to turn on some refineries. We don't need to build anything. And that is a distinct difference. We have a shortage of semiconductor chips because parts of China were shut down. Production was shut down. Smart for us to build new enterprises here because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. But that's different than saying that we don't have the capacity. And really, when you look at the profits that Exxon has made, when you look at the profits that are being made, people are making the decision. Corporations are making the decision that instead of hiring and paying for more labor, instead of expanding production, they're going to throttle it. They're going to increase profits. We're seeing that across the board. You wonder if what the Fed isn't doing isn't really just about trying to stifle labor costs as a bribe to these corporations for basically expanding production in areas where they need to. I'm not saying that's all that, but when you look at England, 9% inflation, ours is 9.8. It's not a function of the fact that there's too much money in the system. And if they genuinely believe that, you wouldn't get an extra $50 billion above and beyond what the Pentagon said. So I don't know. I think more scrutiny for the Fed is definitely warranted. Angry Moose, I just became a backer this week. I grew up in a small orchard in Missouri. Have you ever tried a Jonathan Apple? Left is best. I have indeed. We got him up here. It's interesting, though. It's been so hot in New York that it's interesting to see which apples are doing okay and which are not. Like, you know, up here you look for like a you know, something for zone five. But I'm going to start looking for the outer ends of the zone. So it's like, you know, an apple grove, zone five to nine, let's say. Might want an apple that grows 5 to 10. 10 being warmer than 9. Nico from Mindy. Marquez has been terrorizing children and even the elderly in Japan. Emma did a story about it on TYT yesterday. I guess you can say those monkeys really need spanked.
Macaques.
Dan the Birdman. I left a voicemail for Joe Manchin saying I hoped his grandchildren got a chance to spit on his grave before they died in the hellscape his greed and corruption had condemned them to several weeks ago. Maybe that's what's changed his mind. I mean, who knows? Brett in L.A., hey, MR Crew, my wife and I have been members for 5 years. Today is her birthday. Can I get a shofar for Mimi? Oh. The most amazing person I've ever met. Left is best. Happy birthday, or I should say happy anniversary, Mimi. Middle America. Callie House was an ex-slave that earned a living as a washerwoman. She traveled across the South to get reparations for ex-slaves. The book about her is My Face is Black, and it's great. Left is best. All right, four more of these. V, hey, Sam, we asked for Feldman. Don't try the old lizard people switcheroo. Just kidding. I love Andy Kindler. He would replace Siri on my phone. Feldman had another commitment, but we're on it. ASIAC. There's a 520 area code call coming that is about extremism in the military in the Senate Armed Services Committee. Let's hear it on Monday. Constant state of Missouri. Nothing would make me happier than Missouri being a pickup for the progressives. My hopes aren't high, but I'm excited to vote about it. Left is best. All elections are important elections. And the final I am of the week comes from Judy Giuliani. We never lock down in the States. I feel like he's trying to imitate Louis Black, but fails so hard with the finger wagging and stuff. Guy with no legs can laugh at this. Relax. Jesus effing Christ. Bradley, Matt, Emma, good job today, this week. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie fall. But finding out won't make me feel any better.
where you don't get paid for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my